How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Mike Sempervivi here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Largely healed from the illnesses that took us down 2 weeks ago. Still got a little bit of a frog in my throat, but we'll do our best here on the show today. And we have so much stuff to talk about. Mike and I, before the show, were going down a list of all of the topics, and we pretty much decided there is absolutely no way we can cover everything in the next 2 hours. But we're going to do our best. So, a quick look at everything we're going to be talking about today. Sir Oliver Humperdinck, not in good shape. We'll talk about his career, what's going on with him, give you the latest update. We'll talk about the return of The Rock to Raw. When is he going to be back? What are the plans for WrestleMania? What are the plans for post-WrestleMania? And more, where is he going to be on the WrestleMania card? TNA went to a house show this weekend. Same weekend, actually, that TNA drew the highest rating on Thursday in a long time. 1.4 rating, 1.8 million viewers. We'll talk about that, where they likely will be next week. And does it matter? Does a 1.4 rating for TNA actually matter? Talk about that. We're going to talk about the Strikeforce show from last night. A lot of shows. Mike has actually done some investigation into how much wrestling and mixed martial arts has been on the air in the last 8 days. It's pretty fascinating. We'll talk about that. All of the fights on the show last night, as well as the Strikeforce Heavyweight Grand Prix Tournament. What is the latest in that tournament? When is it going to take place? When are the next matches going to go down? Why was it moved till June? We'll talk about all of that. UFC 127, the ROH Internet pay-per-view last week. Chris Jericho on Dancing with the Stars, plus his book, which is Crack the New York Times bestseller list, Crack the Top 10. We'll talk about that. Plus, the return to WWE of Steve Austin. He is coming back tomorrow. What is he going to do? What is the idea? How are they going to get to it? That actually is a very interesting story. Another WWE star returns tonight after injury. We'll talk about Raw this past Monday night. Shad, formerly of Crime Time. Not serving hard time, but he committed a crime. We'll talk about that, plus the entire WrestleMania card, a new Hall of Fame announcement tomorrow, and so much more. A lot of stuff to get into. We have 2 hours, not enough time, but we're going to give it our best shot. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Worldwide here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 2 hours talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. And sad to open the show with this, but Sir Oliver Humperdinck, one of the more famous managers in the history of wrestling, is currently in hospice care. And unfortunately, he'd been battling cancer, and in the middle of the battle, he suffered a bout of pneumonia. And I guess he decided against chemotherapy, and he has moved himself into hospice care, and a very sad story. Really nice guy. We had him on our show talking about his career about a year ago. It's up in the archives right now. And just a really nice, friendly guy, and we certainly wish him the best.
Oh, God, yeah, absolutely. He was suffering from bladder cancer, and just with the pneumonia, 2 weeks to go ahead and actually pull off doing the surgery, so he's checked himself into the hospice care. So he best known probably for fans that are around our age at about 35 years old, probably his time in WWF when he went there and ended up being the surprise choice. There was the manager's battle, as they did many times in WWF when a new guy would be coming in, and Bam Bam Bigelow surprised everyone and brought in Sir Oliver Humperdinck. He ended up managing Paul Orndorff as well, but he's best known for being around Bigelow for our generation. For a generation slightly older, they grew up in Florida. Obviously, he's going to be best known there, where he was, you know, integral as far as being not only a manager but a wrestler too, but best known for being a manager and being a part of the Army of Darkness stable that Kevin Sullivan had with the Purple Haze and the feuds with Dusty Rhodes, and was just a longtime guy down in Florida and also in WCW when he got the opportunity to manage the Freebirds and was Big Daddy Dink. So a unique character, the look said it all. I mean, bright red hair. He kind of had these eyes that would bulge out, a little bit of a shorter guy would wear these gaudy outfits and played that role perfectly. Just a sad situation, and just wish him the most comfort and the best of luck.
Last night, the Strikeforce show, we're going to talk about that a little bit later on, but I had a friend over, and he ran up. I mean, he literally ran up to me and he said, "Oh my God, I heard The Rock is back." And I said, "Yeah, he's going to be at WrestleMania." And he said, no, but I mean, he's back. Like, he's not going to be going away. And I said, "I hate to break it to you, pal, but he's going away again after WrestleMania." And he had no idea. And this is something that I think we could spend some time on. I really want to talk about this. Rock's return and what this means and what the result is going to be when Rock is not back for good. Now, he came back, he did the promo, and he essentially promised he was never leaving again. And, you know, a lot of people have explained away why he said what he did. You know, I'm sure he had his reasons, and I'm sure he knows what he meant and such. But a lot of fans didn't understand whatever it was that he meant to say. They thought that that means he's coming back. He's going to be at all the house shows. He's going to be at all the TVs. He's going to be at all the pay-per-views. He's back. He's a wrestler again. It's not the case. And Raw, the week after his surprise debut obviously didn't do all that well since nobody knew it was going to be him. Well, actually, you know, if you listen to this show, you probably knew it was going to be him, but your average fan didn't. And he, you know, the week after his debut, I believe 3.9, and then the week after 3.8, SmackDown did its highest rating of all time. I mean, he's really made a difference in business. Sellouts at Elimination Chamber, Raw, big deal. Now, at some point, people are going to figure out Rock is not back. And, you know, I don't think he's going to be on Raw this week. Right now, the idea is he's probably going to be on either next week's show or the go-home show for WrestleMania. And then he's going to be at WrestleMania. And I've heard nothing about anything post-WrestleMania. So, for all of these fans tuning in right now, it's almost like putting a Band-Aid on a problem, in the sense that everybody's all excited. You've got a lot of fans tuning in to see what's going on with The Rock. And you know, what they want, to me, is they want Rock to beat up John Cena. They want these two guys to have a match. And, Mike, what are your thoughts on the idea of Rock teasing a return, a permanent return? At least that's what a lot of people are thinking. And, in reality, not really returning. Doing maybe one more TV, showing up at WrestleMania, and perhaps when WrestleMania is over, you know, him and Cena team up and beat up The Miz and raise each other's hands, and Rock gives him the endorsement, and that's pretty much the end of The Rock for the time being. How do you think that your average fan is going to react to that?
There is going to be a Monday night hangover coming after WrestleMania, and they couldn't get an outside name this year, and, you know, the want to spend the money and to try to go all out. I mean, they couldn't do it, so they had The Rock in their back pocket, or at least was able to negotiate something with him where they can make him the host and have him on the entire show. So that was a smart move. Obviously, Undertaker and Triple H, you know, for both of those guys makes more sense than, you know, Triple H and Sheamus and Undertaker Wade Barrett, even though Sheamus and Barrett would be better for probably the post-WrestleMania direction of the company. But they always get a spike around this time leading into WrestleMania. They're trying to take advantage with it by doing it. But with that said, with, you know, the way The Undertaker and the Triple H face off, you know, the Rock coming in, blowing everybody away, mic-wise, and all that sort of stuff, it's just, there's going to be a hangover. I mean, the only thing they can do that I think is going to make sense is what you said, which is obviously in the end, with the Rock is always going to, you know, people in Cena shirts, they show it over and over. As soon as The Rock comes out there, they're booing John Cena. So they're going to have to do something at the end where, you know, the superpowers unite and they embarrass The Miz. But still, after, we're going to have to see. It's like every year when it comes to WWE, this time of year is never an issue. You know, the stock rebounds, interest is up, you know, the cross-marketing goes up. They do a great job with that stuff around WrestleMania. It's always the post-WrestleMania hangover that they have to deal with, and hopefully, I mean, they have some things in the pipe now with Sin Cara, Awesome Kong, and some other people that they could do some things with, but, and obviously they shake up the roster, they do a lot of releases, they do the switch of the rosters. I'm not sure what the thing is with the draft this year, but hopefully they have something coming out of this, because in the last couple of years, they haven't.
You know, the last couple of years, I think for, like, ever since there's been a WrestleMania, I kind of feel that way, but you know, something they could do, and I kind of feel bad for The Rock, because, like, this is all on his shoulders. You know, He's made it very clear he never wants to have another match again, and I'm sure that, you know, they're going to do everything they can to try and talk him out of that. And question will be, is he willing to do one match with John Cena? And the company would love to have him do a match at SummerSlam or WrestleMania. And to me, like, the best way to do it, if you're going to do something like that, if you can convince him to do it, is you do the original plan that everybody was talking about, where, you know, you have Cena and Miz, Rock is there, and, you know, they do the match, Cena wins the title or whatever, Miz attacks him, or whatever the case might be, or whatever you do to have, I guess with Riley gone, it kind of makes it more difficult because you don't want a 2-on-1 beatdown of the Miz or something like that, but, you know, I'm sure they can work something out where, anyway, the point of it is, Rock and Cena team up, they clean house, they leave the heels laying, and they raise each other's hands, and Rock gives Cena his endorsement, that sort of thing. And then he turns and gives him the Rock Bottom. And, you know, everybody would be so happy. And that's how you end WrestleMania. And the next day, you know, John Cena comes out on TV, and as he's cutting a promo on Rock, you have some other heel run in and attack him, and you do the distraction. And, you know, you got to have the right guy to do the distraction, and you've got to make it meaningful. And you've got to make it such that people actually want to see this guy and Cena fighting. I don't know who it is. I don't know how you do it. I'm not a booker. Hopefully they've got some creative people there. But the point is, you tease it at WrestleMania. You distract from it and go a different direction for a while. And every now and then, Cena brings it up again. And you slowly build to a match at SummerSlam. You know, that's the way that I would do it. But, you know, whether they can get Rock back is the key. If they can't, I don't know what you do at WrestleMania. To me, it's kind of like a mini version of when Steve Austin turned heel at WrestleMania. And it was like they hit this big peak of excitement, and then all of a sudden everybody was sort of let down and you lost, you know, millions of people. I don't think it's going to be that bad, but I think you'll probably lose all the people, all the new people that tuned in. So we'll talk about this more after the break. There's a lot of... I just really feel that line about how I'm back and I'll never go away. I mean, I know what he meant, but a lot of people don't, and I think it was a big misstep. But we'll talk about that more when we come back. Wrestling Observer Worldwide, Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour and a half, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. We were talking before the break about The Rock, his supposed return, and where you go with it. And Mike, any thoughts before we move on to the next subject?
Well, I think if you don't have The Rock locked up, the idea of him and Cena doing something to The Miz where the Rock is hitting the people's elbow as he hits the five-knuckle shuffle or whatever they call it now, you know, on The Miz, I think that makes the most sense. Now, I don't think they would end WrestleMania with The Rock rock-bottoming John Cena. I couldn't see that happening. If they're going to do that, there's going to be something in the middle, and then they're obviously going to have Edge and Alberto Del Rio with, I would assume, Edge winning. If that was going to be the scenario, and unless you're going to have a match right away, if you're going to wait till, you know, SummerSlam, obviously, yeah, they could build it up that long, but then it's leaving Cena. I mean, it's not like The Rock's going to be there every week, and I don't know exactly what his movie commitments and scheduling would be that would play any part of that. And I know he could be on, you know, on the big screen, there's another thing. Now, obviously, what The Rock meant when he said he was going to be there forever was, you know, when John Cena was sent out to say, you know, The Rock, he kind of turned his back on wrestling and wrestling fans, and I'm here, and obviously Cena in his rap hinted at that, or didn't hint at that, actually flat out said that. You know, that was, you know, it did make it sound like The Rock was going to be there every week. I think where, you know, there is a little more of a bait and switch was kind of Buffalo last week, where I think that most of that crowd and kind of how it sounded, and obviously the crowd was loud as hell for The Rock, but you could almost kind of hear a deflation when they, you know, there were a lot of people there that thought he was going to be at the building, and then, no, he was live via satellite from his house.
You know, two things there. First off, if Rock agrees to do a match at SummerSlam, and by the way, everybody, this is all speculation because I don't know if Rock has agreed to anything or is ever going to wrestle again, and he said many, many times, I mean, this is not something that he's just said publicly, but privately, he's never wrestling again. The injury that he suffered doing one of his movies, the Achilles tendon injury, that's a serious deal, And I think that was the moment where he was just like, I'm not risking this stuff again. But if he agrees, and, you know, based on how everything is going, one would think he's got to have it at least perhaps in his mind that maybe I'm going to do one more with John Cena. But if he agrees and he agrees to do SummerSlam, it's great that he's a Hollywood star because he's got other commitments. This is not like if you've got a big match that you want to do at SummerSlam. And with WWE today, they have no patience, you know. The idea of building something up to SummerSlam, I mean, I can't even tell you how many times I've heard such and such a match is going to take place at SummerSlam this year. And they end up moving it up like 5 months because they have no patience. But in the case of The Rock, they can't help it because, you know, if he commits to SummerSlam and he's got a project in the meantime, they can't push that up. They've got to do a slow build to SummerSlam. So I think that's a huge advantage right there. That's number one. And number two, as of a week ago, the two ideas for WrestleMania were either to finish with Undertaker and Triple H or to finish with the Cena-Rock confrontation. And I think a lot of that is going to be determined based on where they're going to go here and what they're going to do. So there's a very good chance that Rock and Cena are going to close the show. And I think that Rock giving Cena the Rock Bottom would be a perfect finish to WrestleMania because the WrestleMania crowd, I mean, we do a thing every year where we get a bunch of people from the website and we do a WrestleMania weekend. And we got a ton of people coming from all over the world to enjoy WrestleMania. We have a get-together on Friday night. All of this information is available on our message board, by the way, if you're listening to this and you want to join us in Atlanta this year. But regardless, you've got and it's not just us. I mean, WrestleMania is a show where people fly in from all over the world. And they drive in from other states. This is a hardcore crowd. And this is a crowd that I think, I mean, me personally, when I think of like a WrestleMania crowd, I envision in my mind what happens if WrestleMania ends with Rock and John Cena shaking hands and hugging, for example. And I just picture like intense hatred from these fans for what they're seeing in front of their eyes. You know, to have been built up for so long that Rock and Cena are going to have a fight and they end hugging. You know, this WrestleMania crowd, I see hating that. Now, if you do the hug and then Rock lays him out, that's something that I can see, like, the place going nuts for. So, maybe I'm wrong, but that's just kind of the way I look at it, and this is going to be interesting. This is going to be, because there are a lot of expectations going into WrestleMania, and it's going to be fascinating to see what happens if they deliver what people are not expecting.
You're giving people fantasy land ideas, and then they'll be thinking, you know what? Tough Enough debuts right after WrestleMania, Steve Austin, and The Rock never minded getting pinned by anybody, so imagine at SummerSlam, you have The Rock and Steve Austin against Cena and Orton.
That would be a big one.
It probably won't happen.
Now let's talk, well, yeah, I don't expect Austin to wrestle either, but, I mean, he's at least, I think, more open to it than Rock. I think he'd be open to one last match with the right guy.
Honestly, if I'm The Rock, honest to God, unless I knew my movie career and TV career is done, which it absolutely is not, I mean, that guy could do guest appearances forever, I wouldn't wrestle a match if there was a thought that I was going to be out 8 to 12 months if I re-rip my Achilles tendon again and be completely immobile.
Yeah, but I mean, Rock, you know, the thing is, Rock still trains all the time. Pretty obvious if you watch him on television. So, you know, if I were Rock, it would just be like, okay, who can I really trust to have a match with and not kill myself? And I think John Cena, you know, he works a pretty safe style. You know, the guy, after going to the TNA house show, if I were Rock, I would never actually, if I were Rock, this is not the guy I would choose, but a guy like Jeff Jarrett, like, I watched Jeff Jarrett live, and it's like, I would wrestle that guy every night for 10 years, and I pretty much could guarantee I would never get hurt. We'll talk about this later, but I just thought Jeff Jarrett at the TNA house show was just an incredible worker, to be honest. But anyway, going back to Steve Austin, he's back tomorrow. He is obviously going to be the main coach on the new Tough Enough, which starts the night after WrestleMania. And this one's interesting because he's coming back, and if you look back 10 years, I mean, it was Rock and Steve Austin, the two biggest stars in all of wrestling. And based on the storyline involving Rock, which is he's the guest host of WrestleMania, he's the big deal, You know, John Cena and Rock have their deal. John Cena, the biggest star in the company right now. And then Steve Austin sort of comes back, and it's kind of like, feels like he's going to be second fiddle.
Yeah, actually, in a way, yes. But depending on what's going to happen here, I mean, obviously they've gone back a little bit to the nostalgia stage, and they're really getting at people's emotions with that, with even just things like the crotch chop, just the fact that it is Triple H and The Undertaker and The Rock's going to be there in Austin, and Trish coming back to not only be on one of the trainers, but now to possibly be wrestling in a match as well. So they're trying to stoke that flame anyway. So I have confidence in that. Yeah, obviously Rock being The Rock is, you know, going to overshadow everybody, but that's got to be expected. I mean, it's not like it's Hogan Flair, but, you know, there's going to be people in Austin's camp that, you know, could never believe it. You know, they feel like he's playing second fiddle, but realistically, not much you can do when The Rock is there.
He's coming back. Most likely the cast of Tough Enough will be at WrestleMania just to be introduced and that sort of thing. The trainers, of course, Steve Austin, Booker T, Trish Stratus, and Hugh Morris, believe it or not, is back to teach these fellas. And it's going to be interesting. They're, you know, they obviously want a pretty big rating. And I don't know. What are your thoughts on Tough Enough? I mean, a part of it is just tell everybody the stats about how much programming has been on in the last 8 days.
Oh, man, it's been absolutely ridiculous. Later on today, there's going to be up on the site the Big 12. I was happening to watch the Big 12 wrestling finals. So I just figured, hey, well, why not write a report on it? And then I started thinking, since last Saturday, we didn't get a chance to do a show last Sunday because we were both dying. But since last Saturday, you had the Ring of Honor pay-per-view and TV show on HDNet. You had WWE, all of their shows, the finals of NXT. Superstars with the epic Tyler Rex, Chris Masters showdown, you know, TNA's TV, Strikeforce, Bellator, HBO Boxing, UFC, the wraparound, pre- and post-game shows on Spike. There was almost 40 hours, and in fact, there probably was more than that when you include, like, the HDNet MMA shows and all of that sort of stuff. There was over 40 hours of programming that took place in the last 8 days, and it's not going to bother Tough Enough because they are being very smart about putting it at 8 o'clock and then after Raw at 11 o'clock and doing another multiple airing. I don't know who watches, you know, WWE Raw or AM Raw on Saturdays, but enough people do where they always keep the thing on, and they're going to add another hour along to that too, which for people on the West Coast on a Saturday night actually comes on at a pretty decent enough time. So it's just the only thing that they may suffer from is the fact that there's just a lot of stuff on, and we're going into the basketball playoffs and NCAA playoffs and hockey playoffs and all that stuff too, and baseball starting. So there's a lot of options out there, and it may get lost in the mix, but I actually feel pretty good about it with what the USA is going to throw behind it.
Yeah, I just think like the UFC on Versus this past Thursday did a, I forget the exact number, like a 0.67 or something like that. But, you know, the worst rating for a UFC show, like a television show that they've ever had. And to me, it's just like, go ahead.
No, I don't think that's that big of a deal. I think it shows you more, and I like Versus for a lot of different reasons, but Comcast doesn't do a very good job. You know, they did it with the Showtime kick by putting it up on their main page and everything, but they don't use their synergy as well as they really should when it comes to the UFC shows. And I know we're going to be bumping up against break here, but I think it's more of an issue of people. Yeah, there's a lot of shows on and all that sort of stuff, but I don't think it's a big deal that they got an 0.67. I mean, yeah, they could go somewhere else, but I don't know. I guess we can talk about it after the break a little bit, but I just don't think the rating is that big of a deal.
Well, I'm not thinking it's a huge deal because, I mean, you know, 2 years ago I said, where we are going is the big shows are going to be big, and the small shows, no one is going to watch. I mean, it was not a mystery this was going to happen. And this is exactly what's going to happen. So, you know, I don't see it as being a huge deal because I kind of expected it, but that brings us to Tough Enough. I mean, we'll get into this after the break, but they're expecting like a 2.4, 2.5 rating for yet another show on Monday night. This better be a hell of a show. We'll talk about this when we come back from the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Worldwide on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here talking about pro wrestling and mixed martial arts for the next hour and a half. More information, WrestlingObserver.com. Daily news updates, daily radio shows. If you love this show and you only get to hear it once per week, or, as was the case last week since we were ill, a repeat, well, WrestlingObserver.com is the place to go. We do daily radio shows. I can't even tell you how many shows we do, but it's in the range of 15 to 20 every single week. Some of these weeks, with all the television, we probably do as many as 25. And Dave Meltzer and I have been up for the last 2 days straight, just doing shows, talking all the news, talking all the television shows, Strikeforce last night, just tons of news, and we'll be up against tomorrow after Raw. So if you love this show and you want more, WrestlingObserver.com is the place to go. It's only $10.99 a month. You not only get all of the new shows, which you can put on your iPod, listen to in the car, on the way to work, in the gym, etc., but you get pretty much every show we've ever done. And I'm talking, think about 10, 15, 20 shows a week, every week, for nearly 6 years. Thousands and thousands of hours up in the archives right now. You just sign up, you go up there, you look through the archives. Names, some of the biggest names in the history of wrestling. Steve Austin has been on the show. Bret Hart, Bruno Sammartino, Chris Jericho, Bryan Danielson, the list goes on and on. They're all up there in the archives, so check it out at WrestlingObserver.com. We were talking about ratings before the break and just mentioning the idea that, I mean, the night after WrestleMania, let's look at this. The night after WrestleMania at 8 p.m., you've got the WWE Hall of Fame ceremony. You've got Chris Jericho on Dancing with the Stars. You've got Raw at 9, and you've got Tough Enough at 11. And then the week after, Tough Enough will be on at 8 and 11. And I don't know, the idea of getting a 2.5 rating for this show, the first week, sure. But week 3? Week 4? I don't know, I see it in the 1-1 range at some point.
I don't think it's ever going to go down that low. I think it's, you know, I maybe 1.5, but I actually think it's going to hover around 2. And, you know, this is going to sound like a ridiculous statement, and I would have to go back and match everything back up again. But I can almost bet you that Dancing with the Stars actually hits WWE seemingly every year that it comes on. It seems to actually affect it with, you know, people's wives and stuff like that watching it. I know I've talked about it with Les Thatcher and actually with a lot of other people where it's a very well-constructed show, and for as long as Chris Jericho is going to be on there, I think, yeah, that is going to actually, you know, take some people. Now, I know the show is on like maybe two times a week, if not more sometimes, and he could be knocked off pretty quick, but I don't think it's going to be an issue at all, because I think it's just apples and oranges comparing Tough Enough to what, like, Spike was, or Versus is, as far as the oversaturation rating for the UFC. UFC needs to do this. I think to have these shows on, even though people may, you know, kind of lament the number and things like that, I mean, it's still a sport that's not legal in every state, including New York State. So the more MMA that's on, the better to me right now. And, you know, whether you choose to skip it or not is, you know, no big deal. And what they put on it, I mean, you know, they're still running these shows and making money off ticket sales and things like that. So I think it's a good idea. But I think that has, again, more to do with Versus, which is way high up on DirecTV. There's still cable providers that don't actually carry it. So I think it has more to do with being on Versus than anything. And Tough Enough, I just don't – I think with how it's positioned and the fact that the original Tough Enough show was – I mean, this is not NXT. I mean, I was very skeptical about that show when it came on MTV. And it actually ended up being very, very good. And they made Al Snow and Hugh Morris and obviously Morrison coming off the show. And they're – you know, this isn't going to be the pewter-esque, you know, SmackDown, you know, approach to Tough Enough. I think they're going to have the right storylines, and with the people that are involved, with Austin, with Booker, with Trish, with Hugh Morris, all people that, you know, come across the screen and have proven themselves. Hugh Morris did a great job when he was on Tough Enough the first time around. Wasn't as good as Al Snow, but was very, very good. So I think with what they have, I don't foresee the rating actually being that bad. I think it's actually going to hold really, really well.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I think the first few weeks are going to do all right, but I just look at, like, week 4. What is the hook? You know, we've seen Austin, we've seen Trish, we've seen Bill DeMott yelling at some dudes, we've seen Booker T doing the spin-a-rooney in the house, and just kind of like, I don't know, unless there's some real charismatic wrestlers on the show. You know, they're going to have guest stars and that sort of thing. Like, I know Rey Mysterio does a guest star date and that sort of thing. But I don't know. I guess we'll see. I could be wrong. But
Look, it's not like TNA with post-editing. You have the ability to do some good post-editing, and USA is looking at this as a, you know, as a reality show, too. So I think they're going to put their best foot forward with this. And I can see being a case where if WWE gets a 3-1 that week, I can see, you know, Tough Enough getting a 2-1. But I think that's going to be more of the correlation. I just don't think – I have more confidence in them right now with starting up the show and making it, you know, sharp coming out of the gate, especially when they have, you know, the Ultimate Fighter to compare it to now and any mistakes they made the last time around. You got to have faith. I'm having at least some faith that this thing is actually going to come out really well.
Well, what's interesting as it regards the rating is the time that the show is going to be airing. Now, me personally, I think the best time is right after Raw, because people watch Raw, you get your big overrun, and up next, Tough Enough with Steve Austin. You know, that's what built Ultimate Fighter. Now, you know, this show was a USA call because they want primetime numbers. And so their call was to put it at 8 p.m. So the original time was just at 8 p.m. And then a few weeks later, they added the 11 p.m. Replay. And to me, I sort of think, you know, unless you're like a huge fan of this show and you just can't wait to see what happens in the next week, I think a lot of fans are just going to wait and watch the post-Raw version, which ends up, I would think, cutting down the rating of your primetime airing. So, I don't know, if the post-Raw show is doing a 1-2, I mean, I just can't conceive of the 8 p.m. viewing doing like a 2-5 and the post-Raw show doing another 1-2. I see both of them falling to, you know, I don't know, maybe 1-1 is probably a little bit low, but you know, I would see like the pre-Raw airing maybe settling in at a 1-6 and the post-Raw at a 1-1. That's kind of the way that I see it. And, you know, that kind of, you know, that's not the 2-5 they were looking for.
Yeah, but I don't know what NCIS exactly how they're or whatever is on right before Raw as it stands right now. I don't know what the advertising, you know, play-in is to that. But, you know, unless USA was going to, I mean, USA likes their homegrown shows. I mean, they usually debut them after Raw, and this is going to be a homegrown show for them. So, you know, I think it doesn't matter. They're going to put the positive spin on both ratings as it is, because I've actually been a big fan of the wraparound idea when it comes to these shows. I mean, have it on twice, and I know that takes out some of the prime time, you know, the numbers from 8 to 9, but it doesn't matter. Your whole Monday night has been centered around Raw for years and will continue to be centered around Raw for years. I mean, to the point where they don't even put the Kennel Club Dog Show, which is very important, you know, and obviously makes some money because it's been on for who knows how long now. You know, they've moved that over to, you know, other parts of the NBC lineup. So it doesn't, I don't think that rating from 8 to 9 is going to affect anything, and I think the more you have this show on, the better the chance that people see it. I mean, it's like a lot of the reality shows on MTV and everything. I mean, it does drive you nuts after a while when you see the same stuff over and over again, but it makes sure that people see it. So I think it's a smart idea, just because look how many people just can't get in their heads that Raw moves from 8 to 9. Or from 9 to 8 sometimes, and they have that early start. So you might as well have it on afterwards, you know, have it on both times and see what you get out of both.
Speaking of ratings, the Impact show this past Thursday night, 1.4 rating and 1.8 million viewers. And what does this mean?
People like cake in the face.
Yeah.
Which I think they screwed up on. But, you know, it doesn't matter. Jeff Jarrett, as you were saying, was awesome in this. The vows that they gave back and forth were awesome in this. And obviously, with it being a tape show, they had gone to Fayetteville, North Carolina, which, again, I know we've had this debate. I'm not in charge of their finances, so I don't care what they wasted on this trip. You know, it made it a lot better for me, you know, aesthetically as a fan watching. So I was happy that they made the move, and obviously word had probably gotten out that Sting had won the title, and people had told other people. So obviously they wanted to see what was going to happen with everything that took place. So the rating doesn't surprise me at all. It's just like, as every week with TNA, they spike up, and then it seems to go down, down, down again. And we'll see this upcoming week if the trend will continue where, after a big event like this, the show takes place and the rating drops throughout it. So it's just one of those things with TNA, until they prove they can maintain a rating like this, you just have to sit back and go, okay, it spiked up for Sting coming back and all that stuff, now what?
Yeah, I've never been averse to the idea of going on the road. And I thought that the show on the road Thursday, I mean, great crowd. The building looked great. Everything about it was great. All I've really said is that I think the excuse that, oh, you know, the fans weren't into the show tonight because they're here, you know, they it's the same fans, it's the impact zone, they've seen it all. I always just find that excuse to be so stupid because, you know, throughout the history of wrestling, there have been organizations that have run the same building every week. And, you know, the best ones have done like 10,000 fans week after week after week. You know, it's not the fans and it's not the building. I mean, you can burn out the fans in your building by presenting a poor product. I mean, that's the issue to me. The issue to me is if your fans in the same building every week are bored and they don't care, then that's your fault. That's not their fault. That's your fault for booking a product that has lost their interest. You know, if you book great pro wrestling programming, then you should have no problem running in the same building week after week. You know, obviously in TNA's case, they have burned out those fans, but that's TNA's fault, not the fault of the Impact Zone. So, you know, if you got to go on the road, great, that's fine. That's all fine. But I mean, like you said, it's what are the expenses of going on the road? You know, if the expenses are excessive, then to me, you should think about, well, maybe it would be cheaper to get rid of our current writing crew and bring in somebody new and fresh and have them try to create some programming that is new and fresh. And then maybe the fans of the Impact Zone won't get burned out seeing the show every week. That's just sort of the way I look at it. I mean, you know, Arena Mexico, when it's hot, they're going to be doing 8,000 to 10,000 fans every single week in the same building week after week after week. So it's not a building issue. It's not same time, same place issue. It's the people don't care about what you're putting on.
And it's, yeah, you're exactly right. But obviously, for whatever reason, they don't make that change. And I mean, obviously, you know, Hulk Hogan obviously coming back was probably a big deal to some people. But realistically, when you talk about the money spent, could that show have been there without Hulk Hogan? Could that show have been, you know, there and gotten that reaction without Scott Steiner? Probably, yeah. So it's what they've spent on guys too, and obviously Sting coming back, and yeah, it's just, again, it just, until TNA gets out of the cycle, it's hard to believe anything from them because they'll be back down to about a 1-1, and you know, it just repeats itself.
I went to the TNA house show in Kent, Parallel Universe. I mean, I had a lot of fun at that show. The last two matches, they did AJ Styles and Matt Hardy and Jeff Hardy and Mr. Anderson, and they were actually both disappointing. The show was great up until intermission. It was like a TNA house show up until intermission with a bunch of guys having great matches, crowds going nuts. And then after intermission, it was like a WWE prelim house show card. You know, Matt Hardy and AJ Styles just, you know, AJ tried hard, but Matt was just doing a match. And same thing with Jeff Hardy and Mr. Anderson. Anderson was trying really hard, but unlike AJ Styles, he's not that great a worker. And so you add on top of that, Jeff Hardy going through the motions. And, you know, aside from the women's match, I think the main event was the second worst match on the show, to be honest with you. And the undercard was just like, you know, you had matches like D-Von, Dudley, and Hernandez, which on paper sounds like, oh my God, that doesn't sound very good. That match was great. D-Von is a very good singles worker. He's a great babyface. Hernandez was a great heel, and D-Von pulled him through a great match. I shouldn't say it wasn't like a 3.5-star match or anything like that, but it was totally fine. And a fun time had by all, particularly the intermission, or the match before intermission. But we're out of time. I'll talk about that when we come back. Wrestling Observer Worldwide on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. We were talking about the TNA house show in Kent, Washington before the break. Had a really good time. The match before intermission was Beer Money and Scott Steiner against Jeff Jarrett and Ink Inc. And you look at that on paper, if you only watch Impact, and you're like, well, you know, bunch of guys having a six-man, you know, should be all right. This match was awesome. This was an awesome house show match. It was not the best match I have seen all year. You know, I've seen some good stuff on Ring of Honor. I've seen some good stuff in WWE and Dragon Gate. But as far as like a match that, as a fan sitting there, I just had so much fun. I have not seen a match like this since I went down to Battle of Los Angeles last September or October for PWG. This was so much fun. And it just kind of really made me even more upset about Impact, because I saw all these guys having these great matches. You know, at the house show, they know what the fans want to see. You don't have guys miscast. You know, Jeff Hardy is a babyface on the house shows. Mr. Anderson is a heel on the house shows. Inc. played heel. You know, Beer Money were babyfaces and everybody loved them. And, you know, even like Kendrick, local guy. So they made sure that he was babyface. So everybody was happy to cheer for the local guy. So it was just a really great time. And if you've never gone to a TNA house show, if you're a person that can't stand Impact and thinks that TNA sucks, you really got to go to a house show, because suffice to say, TNA does not suck. Impact sucks. And I had the time of my life at the TNA house show.
Yeah, that's the whole thing. I've never had a chance to make it to one, but that's what everybody says about them. And if they could figure out a way to bottle that up and it's somehow presented instead of Impact every week, and you've said it many times before, it's because the writing doesn't get in the way of the house shows. You know, they're out there having great matches, and you know, Jeff Jarrett again. You know, just it, if there's one thing Jeff Jarrett is, he's always been an underrated pro, and you know. Glad to actually hear him do that again on the house show, too. Actually inciting a mini riot with large people.
Yeah, we're going to talk about it after the break, and I just had a revelation as well as to why TNA house shows are so awesome. So we're going to talk about that when we get back. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez and Mike Sempervivi here on Wrestling Observer Live. We're here for the next hour talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Before the break, we were talking the TNA house show in Kent, Washington, and I had a revelation. And since this is a brief segment, it's going to be a tease. If you want the entire revelation, you're going to have to read the cover story of this week's Figure Four Weekly only at WrestlingObserver.com, because I'm going to write a big thing on it. I just thought about this right now. One of the keys I have determined to the success of the TNA house shows, besides the fact that the wrestlers actually get to wrestle matches and the guys are not miscast, meaning a guy like Jeff Hardy, for example, works as a babyface on the house shows as opposed to a heel. And by works as a babyface, I mean they send out Mr. Anderson to cut a heel promo and bury the local sports team to ensure that Jeff Hardy is cheered. Aside from that, the thing that really struck me that I just thought about right now is I took my wife, who is not a wrestling fan, to this TNA house show. And she had the time of her life. And granted, there was alcohol involved. She drank throughout the show. But boy, did she have a good time. And the reason for that, and the reason that she can't even watch Impact for 5 minutes, and Impact infuriates me, is because the TNA house show was fun. All of the matches were fun. Everybody was having a good time. The heels were foiled. The baby faces, for the most part, won. And granted, you can't do a TV show where all of the baby faces win all the time. But still, there was an overwhelming feeling of fun at this house show. Whereas when you watch Impact, there's this overwhelming feeling of not fun. All the girls are always screeching at each other. None of the teams can get along. Everybody hates each other. Everybody is always screaming. Everybody is always swearing. There's always these bad things happening. There's these brawls. There's, you know, it's just not a fun environment on Impact. And the house show is the exact opposite. And as I noted, granted, you cannot just have an Impact show where everything is fun. But the house shows sure feel a heck of a lot more fun than Impact. And I think that that's something that you could actually bring to the television show and make it something that more people would want to watch. We can talk more about this after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next hour, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, talking TNA, fun versus not fun, house shows versus TV tapings, but we've got so much more to discuss. Mike, Dancing with the Stars. Chris Jericho is going to be on the show. Daniel LaRusso, the original Karate Kid. Kendra Wilkinson. Sugar Ray Leonard, is that correct? Is Sugar Ray on the show?
Sugar Ray Leonard is on the show.
Oh, my God. What a lineup this is. I may even watch this season.
Wendy Williams, asking how you doing, is on the show.
Oh, my God.
Which, by the way, what did you say the name? Ralph Macchio from The Karate Kid.
Yeah, Ralph Macchio. He was Daniel LaRusso, remember?
Was that his name? I just remember he had Daniel's son. I didn't know he had a last name.
I remember because I was watching Karate Kid about a year ago, which, by the way, you know, when I was a kid, I loved that movie. I loved that movie. Can't even tell you how many times I watched. And Karate Kid Part 2. Really loved Karate Kid Part 2. And I was overjoyed to learn that the Sato's son, the main heel, actually owns a restaurant like 10 minutes from my house. And we're going to have our annual Super China Buffet Day feast on SummerSlam weekend. SummerSlam Sunday is probably going to be at that restaurant. I cannot wait! But anyway, the point was, watched it about a year ago. It's still awesome. It's like one of those movies that still holds up because it has a great story. It has a story that 100 years from now, the movie is still going to be great. But regardless, I was amazed to see that Ralph Macchio's character, his last name was LaRusso. What a rib that was. Anyway, he's going to be on the show this year.
Well, and that's, I don't know. Now, Wendy Williams would probably have the most crossover cachet. Now, I don't know if she plays to the older, and I would assume, whiter audience, if I recall the demographics correctly, that watch Dancing with the Stars. So you'd go, well, who is going to be the favorite here? Just thinking, how long will Chris Jericho last? You figure boxers have good feet, but Floyd Mayweather, proved that he couldn't be on there, and his feet work far better than Sugar Ray Leonard's at this point. I would assume at least far younger and far better footwork anyway, not that Sugar Ray wasn't, but it'll be interesting to see how long Jericho goes here. I know he's got, I think it's Cheryl Burke, who is, I believe, does quite well every year, if I recall correctly. So, interesting. Chris Jericho, Chris Jericho doesn't need WWE. WWE needs Chris Jericho. Not that they don't need each other somewhat, but he has done a very, very good job. His book, which was not published by WWE, you could tell he talks about in the book, which is now, I believe, number 9 on the New York Times bestsellers list. He's been able to kind of forge a incredibly respectful friendship, or maybe not. He's as much of a friend he makes it out to be with Vince McMahon as anybody can possibly be. And they respect each other on such a business level where, and it's proving itself. Jericho's done a great job with a career after wrestling and is one of those guys that other wrestlers, especially young ones, probably look at and go, you know, this is why I need to save my money, diversify, and have plans for afterwards.
Let's do some of the emails here, then we'll get back into the news. We got tons of emails being sent in here, so let's get into it. This is from Sean. I remember a while back, you and Paul White had a bit of heat, and then I quit watching wrestling. Now that I'm back, I'm wondering if that was ever resolved. I wonder if he's back because of The Rock. Paul White, of course, is the Big Show, and this is about 10 years ago. I had made some comments regarding his weight because it had gotten out of control. For those that have never seen, like, The Big Show, when he first debuted, he was downright lean. And then he got really fat. Like, really fat. And I made some comments about that. And I think some folks may have alerted him to these comments. And he was none too happy. I cannot say that I know for sure that this heat was ever resolved. But I do know that a few years later, he began to do interviews noting that he had, in fact, gotten way too fat. And ended up, I guess, making that determination on his own and working to lose weight. So hopefully all of that is water under the bridge. I hope that the Big Show is not still mad at me. I'm a fan of the Big Show, actually. I think he's a funny guy, a really funny guy. So if I ever run into him, hopefully he doesn't try to chokeslam me. That's all I have to say about that.
Well, good. I hope he didn't have heat with me. I was probably one of the only people that actually really enjoyed that Big Boss Man, Big Show, You're a Big Nasty Bastard and Your Mama Said So bit.
Yeah. This person here says, just want to know your thoughts on how The Rock would be on the mic in this PG era. I was watching some of the old videos of The Rock from the early 2000s. There's no way he'd get away with the majority of the things he used to say. Do you think he could have ended up like Cena, somewhat watered down by what he's allowed to say? Well, it's PG now. He's done two promos. He's kind of walked the line, so to speak, but still great promos. Rock is a great promo guy. He would not read something completely stupid, or he'd find a way to make it work. which I can't say the same for John Cena. So I think he would have been fine. Obviously, his promos, I'm sure, were a little better in certain ways for people that like the non-PG era. But if you're a great promo, you can cut a great promo in a PG and a non-PG environment. So I'm not too concerned about that. What are your thoughts?
I forget the name of the movie, not Gridiron Gang. It was the one he did with Rosalind Sanchez, where he was the quarterback of the football team, which was a Disney movie in PG. And it's what we've talked about with PG. It's not what you say or anything like that. And he did go over the line in what they've been doing with this era, you know, how it's actually been. But they got, you know, you can't really beat The Rock. They tried in that initial interview to do and then just gave up on it. And then, you know, it's fine, because realistically, if you're letting your kid up at 11 o'clock at night, you know, or it was at past 11 o'clock, it was like 11:15, he was still getting his roll on. So if your kid's that impressionable and up that late, then you probably have bigger problems. So I don't really have an issue with that at that point of night. But, you know, it's proven by the fact that kids love him with the Tooth Fairy and that football movie that he did and all that other stuff. You can have PG and be entertaining and have colorful wordplay, and like a lot of these movies where they're talking to the adults and they slip in jokes that are over kids' head. If the writing is fine, that's all it really matters. They've given Cena bad, you know, they've given him some bad material, and he's not as quick on his feet as Rock is. There are few guys that are, so, you know, it's not Cena's fault, and Rock would have been completely fine. Whatever they give him, he can make it work without an issue.
Wrestling is all about superstars and entertainment, and I've made the PG argument a million times, but when Raw had big stars like Rock and Austin and Foley and Triple H when he was just starting to get over, it was exciting and there were stars, and it happened to not be PG at the time. It's PG now. Would it really be better if Kofi Kingston was swearing every week? I mean, really, would it be better if Jack Swagger were walking the line of PG-13 in his promos? Would it really be a better product? Probably not. You know, if it's just funny, the whole PG thing. If Rock and Austin and Foley and Triple H and all of those guys during the Monday Night Wars, if Raw had been PG at that time, and today it was PG-13, and you had Kofi and Jack Swagger and guys like that, you know, cutting PG-13 promos, people would be going, man, I wish Raw would go PG again, you know? Because they would be romanticizing an era, and they would be misplacing their romanticism, if that makes any sense. You know, again, it was not PG-13 that made Raw so exciting back in the day. It was a more exciting show during a PG-13 era. And it is a much, much less exciting show today. And if you move back to PG-13, it's still going to be these same guys that are not as exciting today doing PG-13 promos.
Well, that's exactly it. And the fact that, I mean, they're bringing, you know, they're going back a little bit to the Attitude Era just because they want to, you know, spark up those fans that were there before for this year's WrestleMania. But, you know, it comes down to the writing, not the content that's on there. And with old promos that get romanticized and things like that, there was a lot of bad stuff that happened then. It's just that they had stars.
This person said, why would Vince decide to use Jerry Lawler as an in-ring performer after all this time and at this point in his career? Does Vince have a soft spot for Lawler to include him in matches against world champions at WrestleMania? Just seems like Vince would rather push his young guys rather than his old legends. Well, we could talk about this a little bit more after the break. We're running up against one of them here. But suffice to say, I think Vince really does have a soft spot for Lawler, because Lawler's like the one guy that never gets yelled at on the headsets. I mean, Vince just yells and screams and freaks out at everybody, but he never does that for Jerry Lawler. It's been a couple of times I know it's happened, but in general, Lawler usually gets off pretty easy. And I think Vince knows that Lawler can perform even at this level, and he's never had a WrestleMania, so this is his chance. We'll talk more about that after the break. Wrestling Observer Live on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com. Here for the next 40 minutes, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts, talking about Jerry Lawler before the break. And Mike, why is Jerry Lawler fighting at WrestleMania at this stage of his career?
Because that's what you do when you don't have developmental. That's what you do when you skip over things fast. I mean, I love Jerry Lawler. I've had a chance to watch him, you know, for ages. And when there was FNN Score, which was a cable network that started up, it was news during the day. But on the weekends, they would actually show tons of pro wrestling, which included Memphis, which included the Polynesian Pro Show, which, you know, Lawler would pop up on in the AWA and all that stuff. So Jerry Lawler is great. I love Jerry Lawler. It is kind of amazing that there's a 61-year-old man that is better in a lot of ways than a lot of the roster because he's had a chance to do so much throughout his entire career and get to this point where he can have a match with Michael Cole that they're building around to give him his WrestleMania spotlight. And he's done a great job. This is really awesome for him, and the paycheck is going to be really awesome for him. And the thought of the possibilities of Jim Ross back and Jack Swagger, who I do like, but at least he's going to get something out of WrestleMania 2 this way. I'm just hoping the Soaring Eagle gets taken care of as well. Maybe Jack's father, Bunkhouse Buck, can get taken care of as well in here. Jimmy Hart. I know that too many people is going to water it down, but, you know, depending on what's going to happen with this, how seriously, I mean, if he goes out there and can beat Michael Cole and actually, you know, cut him open, that would be awesome. But if they are just going to make it for laughs, you might as well just have as many, you know, wacky characters in there as possible. I hope they don't play it for laughs, but with WWE, just sometimes you don't know.
This would be a great time for blood. If Lawler could go out there and bloody up Cole and pile drive him in the next week, I think people would really be happy with that outcome.
That's the thing. Cole can't go back to being a commentator, and I know Josh Matthews is Josh Matthews. Again, he's only going to be working for one place. He's only had X amount of time in trying to be able to commentate. I'm fine with Josh Matthews being put in the main spot and have Michael Cole get pile driven. You know, they can make it, you know, in WWE's mind, Kaufman 2K, where he comes back, you know, screaming how he's going to get Lawler and he'll have an army. You know, can you imagine a wacky Memphis army of, like, Awesome Kong or something like that? I mean, as long as Cole comes back as a character, because, you know, to me, a lot of what he's doing now, it's not good heat. For me, it's turn-it-off heat, except as a character. If he's just purely paying a character, I can actually get behind it. And if he gets pile-driven, is in a neck brace, you know, in the old pro wrestling style for a while, and he tries to send people after Lawler and maybe he donks Lawler off, but there's a protector for him and there's something that can happen after WrestleMania that creates feuds, I think it's a good idea. Again, you know, on the surface, though, you know, history, you'll have to explain this to people of when they look, you know, why did 61-year-old Jerry Lawler wrestle the announcer? We're going to have to try to explain this, and it's going to take a long time to go through the whole story. Hey, they still got to tie up the loose ends with the GM.
Well, they do. They do. There was talk that it might be Triple H, but I don't think that's going to happen now. We got a question here. Rumor is Taker will beat Triple H in a retirement match at WrestleMania. Is there any truth to this? Well, the idea a few weeks back was Triple H versus Undertaker, streak versus career, Shawn Michaels is referee. Now, I don't know if that's where they're going. They seem to tease a lot of this on Raw. Hunter was talking about how he was either going to beat Undertaker or die trying, and how there was nothing left for him in his career. Burying the locker room, I should add. There are no challenges, he said, for either me or Undertaker backstage. So, certainly was teasing it, and Shawn Michaels was kind of teasing it when they talked to him. I don't know if that's the direction they're going. I mean, we've talked about this before. I don't know, like, the idea of Triple H being gone for a full year and then coming back and in 5 weeks making us care about him putting his career on the line when he's already been gone for so long. It's going to be a hard sell. But what are your thoughts?
If they were going to try to do it, I would have faith in them because of who's in it that they could do that. The thing is, with Austin in, with Rock in, again, now you're going to water that down. And was it worth it for 5 weeks? I mean, the idea of Shawn Michaels being involved and the threat of screwing The Undertaker, I mean, I wish they would have started this, you know, a lot sooner, because that would have been something really good. That, again, the problem with The Undertaker is, does anybody actually think they're going to donk off his streak, even if it is Triple H? And I think with having that type of, you know, stipulation attached to it, I think you would have gotten people more involved. But, you know, as it stands now, in only 5 weeks, I think it would just be a waste of that stipulation if they were going to go to do that.
Let me ask you this question, because I haven't really thought about this till just now, but, you know, Sean's interview, he came on television and he talked about the idea of Triple H breaking the streak, and he said, you know, if anybody could do it, it would be Triple H. And they asked, how do you feel about this? And he said, well, you know, Hunter's my best friend. I'd be really happy for him if he beat the streak. But at the same time, I tried twice and I couldn't do it. And maybe there'd be that part of me that would be really upset if he actually succeeded. And to me, the streak is a sort of thing where I think most fans believe it's never going to be broken. And to me, if you're doing Shawn Michaels as guest referee, I wouldn't want Shawn waffling back and forth about whether he would be happy for Hunter or not. I would do it the way that I originally had it conceived in my head when this was brought up, of Triple H and Shawn Michaels are best friends. Shawn would like nothing more in the world than for his best friend to beat the streak, because he hates the fact that he tried twice, he could not beat The Undertaker, and not only did he fail twice, but Undertaker ended his career. He's outraged at this. He's going to induct his best friend into the Hall of Fame the night before. I want people going into this show thinking, Shawn for sure is going to screw Triple H or screw Undertaker out of his streak. I shouldn't say for sure, but, you know, he's going to be the referee, and he's made it abundantly clear he's really, really upset. And I want fans to be thinking, there is a very good possibility that Shawn is going to try to screw Undertaker out of the streak. That, to me, is the hook. The hook is not Shawn going in there and waffling back and forth, you know. Do I want to screw Undertaker? Do I not? Do I want to help my best friend, or am I going to be jealous? I don't think you really want that in this particular match. I think you want people going in thinking, if I pay my money, I may actually see the end of the streak. I really think that's the way they got to go, and they're going a different direction with it. They're going a, will he or won't he? And I don't want any of that, maybe he won't. I think to me, to make this work, it's got to be, man, you know, Undertaker is really fighting the odds here. There's a good chance the streak is going to be broken. If not, how is he going to save his streak? That to me is where you want to go with this. What are your thoughts?
I completely agree, which is why they it's too late to me to start it up. And again, they could do it because of the people that are involved, but I just think, why? You know, I don't think you want to have The Undertaker with a no contest on his, you know, resume, but you could do it and push it out. I mean, there's another one you could do all summer long if you wanted to build up to something later on down the line where you could really build up to it. And, you know, there's a lot of different ways you could go with it, but, you know, as of now, I would have it as just a match. It's just then, how does it end, I guess, and where do you go from there? Because The Undertaker isn't going to be around a lot. It's, you know, Triple H isn't going to be around a lot. And the one thing that Triple H did have, which was Sheamus, I mean, it was eliminated, you know, dead and buried on Monday night. So I don't know. I mean, if they go with it, you know, again, I have faith in it that they'll be able to pull it off a little bit, but I think they'd be wasting it.
There is another way to do it. And that is, and this may be what they're doing, actually. I thought of this as well. The other way you kind of do it is you have Shawn do the promos he's doing and talk about how Hunter's my best friend, but man, I'd be really sad if he was the guy that broke the streak after I tried so hard. And, you know, I'm going to be a fair referee. I'm just going to call it right down the middle. And you have Undertaker be the guy that says, you know, I don't believe a word you say. I do not believe for a minute you're going to call this match right down the middle. You're inducting this guy into the Hall of Fame. I beat you twice. I retired you. You know, I don't believe for one second. I believe that you're going to go in there and you're going to try and screw me. And if you try, I'm going to kill you. You know, that's the other way you can go, where you have Undertaker playing that role of the guy that does not believe this. You don't have to have Shawn, you know, blatantly go out there and give people this impression. But you do give people this impression by having Shawn and Hunter, you know, act like, you know, this is going to be called right down the middle, and Undertaker is a paranoid one that doesn't believe it. And so you buy the show thinking, you know, is Undertaker right? Is Shawn going to call it down down the middle, or is he right, and they're going to try to screw him out of his streak? You can go that direction as well, but they have to make it very, very clear that Undertaker does not believe for a moment that Shawn is going to call it right down the middle. And then, at least with that one, if Shawn does call it right down the middle, and Undertaker tombstones and pins Triple H, then, you know, it's just, you know, it is what it is. So I think you can go that direction as well.
Well, yeah, and the one thing that they can't do, which is have Shawn Michaels kill off Triple H by turning on him, which, because the Hall of Fame is airing the next night, so you're going to have Triple H probably inducting Shawn Michaels on that anyway. But, again, not enough time for anybody thinking that. Not enough time has gone on where you're building up to even the thought of making it a surprise that Shawn Michaels is going to do that. That's just something you can't do now either. Unless you're going to do something where he ends up being the GM and it's, well, Hunter, you know, now you have work to do as Mr. Levesque, and, you know, he becomes the new Mr. McMahon type character, which I don't foresee happening yet.
This person here says, why do you think they gave Cody a see-through mask where it's apparent his nose was not broken? Why not the Joey Mercury style opaque one? I think the idea was his nose was broken, but it was fixed, and now he's wearing the mask while he heals. So that's his nose is not supposed to be broken right now. It was broken, but he underwent reconstructive surgery, and now his face is back to what it was, and he's just protecting it now. But with that said, I have no idea why it's see-through. I think it should be opaque, but or not opaque. I think isn't opaque also see-through?
Athletes use them all the time, though.
Yeah, I think it should be something that you're wondering what his face looks like underneath, and then you can do mask versus mask at Mania or something like that. But we're going to head to a break. We'll be back in just a moment with more news and email questions. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Worldwide on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here on Wrestling Observer Live. Brian Alvarez here from WrestlingObserver.com, joined by Mike Sempervivi, also of WrestlingObserver.com, here for the next 20 minutes, talking pro wrestling and mixed martial arts. Got some news to talk about, some email questions, and more. If you love this show and you want more, you only get to hear it once per week. WrestlingObserver.com is the place to go. Daily radio shows. And by daily, I mean at least one a day. A couple of days ago, I did 3 shows in one day. Vinny and I do shows. Dave and I do shows. We got a bunch of different hosts that do different shows on MMA, history of wrestling, whole nine yards. Suffice to say, thousands and thousands of hours of audio at your fingertips. It's only $10.99 per month, but if you sign up, you not only get all of the brand new shows, meaning wake up every morning, put them on your iPod, you'll have stuff to listen to all day long on the way to work, on your commute, at the gym, wherever it is that you listen to audio. Wrestling Observer Radio, Figure 4 Daily, The Adam and Mike Big Audio Nightmare, Tough Talk, list goes on and on. They're all up and available at WrestlingObserver.com. Not only all of the new shows, but every show we have ever done. If you wake up one morning and there's only one new show on the site, fret not. Go into the archives. Every show we've ever done, dating back to 2005. Tens of thousands of hours of audio available right now. Steve Austin, Mick Foley, Ric Flair, Bruno Sammartino, some of the biggest names in the history of wrestling have been interviewed on our show, and mixed martial arts as well. We're starting a new MMA show. Be joined by Anthony Pettis this coming Wednesday, talking about the ninja kick he did at the WEC show. And then 2 weeks later, Bobby Lashley is going to be on the show. So just more audio than you could possibly listen to in your entire life. It's all up at WrestlingObserver.com. Check it out. Mike, UFC on Versus on Thursday. We don't need to run down the entire show, but I haven't heard a lot of reports from anybody that watched the show in 3D. I think that should have been a bigger story than it ended up being.
I think the biggest story, after seeing the 3D cameras in use in Salisbury for the ESPN Friday Night Fights telecast, the thing that's most amazing about 3D is it looks like the camera weighs 7,536 pounds. Like, there was an old guy that was on the ring that actually, you know, he would go in and actually shoot the ring introductions, but after the announcer left the ring and before the fight started, would hand it off to a younger, larger man to take the camera helm. So it just shows, I mean, obviously Comcast has now got the Xfinity channel in 3D. ESPN's doing some things for a while now, and it's obviously growing. It's like high def was probably, what, we're going back 5 to 10 years ago now, the same sort of thing where they're putting out a bunch of content. Realistically, nobody is seeing any of this stuff, and it's going to be a while before. I mean, there's people don't even realize that there's two or three, at least two, if not three types of 3D technology now that you can see, and Japan is actually ahead of us. There's, I think, in the Wall Street Journal last week, they were talking about that. So it's inaccessible. I'm sure there's somebody out there that probably saw it, but they're probably so incredibly wealthy with their TV that they're not even looking at the website right now. They're just on their gold boat.
The TVs in the next few years, they're working on 3D televisions where you don't need glasses. And once those are available, and if 3D becomes widespread, I always wonder, you know, when people talk about piracy and how online piracy is getting worse and it could kill pay-per-view and this and that, I always think about how you can't look at this like, you know, more and more people are going to be doing piracy, and so there are going to be less and less people buying pay-per-views. You got to look at different things like, how is technology going to advance where people may not want to pirate the show? Because if they pirate the show, they're not going to be able to see it in 3D. You know, I always wonder how things like that are going to affect different things. I mean, if you can get, you know, your 55-inch television that shows the event in 3D without glasses, and on the other hand, you can pirate it in 2D, you know, for free on a small computer screen, or maybe even plug it into your computer. You know, there may be a lot of people that are willing to plop down their $55 because they want to see it in 3D. You know, you never know how technology is going to advance and what, you know, what changes are going to occur and how that will affect different things. So that's going to be an interesting one to watch. But if anybody watched UFC on Versus in 3D, drop me a line. Let me know how it was, because I actually have not heard a thing about it. Mike?
Look, you're not going to stop piracy, but what you are going to do is doing more what the UFC is doing now, which they took an idea from Strikeforce on this last show of setting up, I think it's UFC TV, which was their original web address. They've switched that part of the site up now where you can actually have production shots, the ref cam. I don't know about the ref cam, but you have all these different interactive things, and it's like an artist now. I mean, it's easy to download music. What they had to do after that was you have to be able to tour. You have to be able to do this and that and the other, and merchandising and all that sort of stuff means a lot more. And you're making people, you're going to give them a full-service event when you want them to pay their money. There's people that are going to download it anyway. They will just be too cheap and just will download it and watch it in 2D and be completely satisfied with that. But as things go along, you're buying the event. You're buying all the bells and whistles that go with it. That's what they're going to be selling. That's what these places have to do to make sure that, you know, we're going to be bootlegged, but at least let's get our cut off of the people and give them their money's worth.
Daichi Hashimoto made his debut, the son of Shinya Hashimoto, debuted against Masachono, actually. And apparently, he was ridiculously over, and the reports are he could be the next big Japanese superstar. And Mike, tell us a little about Daichi Hashimoto.
Yeah, you can't talk about Daichi Hashimoto without talking about his father. When it comes to the triumphant, and they called them the Three Musketeers over in Japan in the 90s, the next wave of New Japan and the next wave of Japanese pro wrestling superstar, there were three. There was Shinya Hashimoto, Masahiro Chono, and the great Muda, Keiji Muto. Obviously, to American fans, the great Muda, Keiji Muto, is probably the greatest Japanese wrestler to probably ever walk the face of the earth for those people who grew up in that time. Masachono was always the cool guy, and is number two as far as probably the rest of the world goes. You know, he's talked about and hyped up a lot when it comes to ex-wrestlers that work with him. They all love being around him. He was the coolest guy in the building. And he gets two, and three ends up being Shinya Hashimoto, which, if you were in Japan, is actually completely reversed. Shinya Hashimoto has been on top of some of the biggest cards and made a lot of money for New Japan and was able to sell at the Tokyo Dome and was an integral part of their success and their big money-making in the 90s. He is a huge star in Japan and was a huge star in Japan before he succumbed to cancer. And his son, Daichi Hashimoto, I mean, they've been building this up as a big deal in the 01 company run by Otani and a couple other people. And they've been building to this. You know, they've had reunion shows as far as, you know, honoring Hashimoto's legacy and his passing, and this was a pay-per-view show put on by 01, and it seemed to be a large, legitimate crowd that packed Sumo Hall to see this show, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, how much money was made from it. But gets to have a match against Masachono, which makes complete sense. Chono, even his broken down state, you know, defeats Hashimoto, which, because that's how it works in Japan. Even though, you know, Masachono is a Fabergé egg at this point, you know, and Hashimoto could legitimately probably beat the man. That's not how it works in Japan. Chono beats him. Muda comes out afterwards and says, I want mine, you know, his next match to be against me. So they're doing everything right as far as, you know, them going back and tweaking the interest and the fire of the fans that have left Japanese wrestling behind and kind of going back to them and trying to get them sparked back up again. And Daichi Hashimoto, who I believe is 20 years old, is one of those guys that can actually probably do it.
I think, is he 20 years old? I thought he was actually even younger than that.
I want to say,
I think
19,
he's 18.
But I think he may have turned 20. I mean, he is a young dude. I mean, he is, put it like this, he's not cracked 21 yet, if nothing else.
He may only be 18.
Yeah, I mean, he's very, very, very young. And in fact, I think, yeah, I mean, I think they had a birthday thing when they announced that he was going to be on, so he may actually only be 18 at the Hashimoto show where they had one of the reunions and they paid honor to him when they announced that this thing was going to happen. They've been building to this for a while.
New Japan's 39th anniversary.
Yes, the biggest news coming out of this, realistically, is that MVP has made his way back to Japan again. He obviously, the last time I think we were on the air, we were talking about the fact that a cab was stolen by his tag team partner, Nosawa Rangai, and he ended up having to team with Taichi. Well, he went back for the New Japan Cup, which is taking place, and knocked off American Carl Anderson, who was half of the IWGP Tag Champions with Giant Bernard. And Bernard, just a couple days ago, lost his NOAH Global Honored Crown championship match against Takashi Sugiura, who, amazingly, is only 4 title defenses from breaking the NOAH defense list, which I know people will look at that and it's a depressed time. I would actually just give Sugiura, as good of a worker as he is and, you know, in as bad a shape as they're in, I would actually have him go ahead and break the record.
This person here is a Japanese question. What does he hold up on WWE signing Jesse White, the son of Vader?
I don't know. That's a good question. I can actually, Les Thatcher won't be around this week, but I'm not sure if he's talked to Harley at all, or I know he was working with Vader and his promotion over there. I'm not sure, though, where he is as far as a dojo or if he's working with anybody right now, but I can find that out.
Shad Gaspard was arrested yesterday, formerly of Crime Time.
For being dumb.
Apparently he was jaywalking, and he thought it was kind of stupid for an officer to cite him for jaywalking. So apparently they got into an argument, him and the cop. They charged him with resisting arrest and obstructing official business. He was taken to jail. His wife had to call a bondsman to bail him out. And now I guess he is claiming racial profiling. So this was at the Arnold Classic this weekend. And I guess Rob Terry, of all people, was there with him. Shocking that TNA sent Rob Terry to the Arnold Classic, by the way. But, yeah, so there you go.
By the way,
kids.
Good move for Strikeforce for having it on that day. I know WEC ran there. It was either, I think, 2 years ago. And it's a smart move because the amount of people that are there to have that attraction and latch onto it the same way Dragon Gate and Ring of Honor have with WrestleMania weekend. But, yeah, you know, I live at the beach, and there's a lot of people in the summertime to get jaywalking. It's an easy way for the county or the state to make money, I swear, sometimes. But, you know, it's not that big of a deal. You know, you got hit with jaywalking, that's fine. I mean, I don't know what happened with that, if he was beeping that much, but come on, man. It was a jaywalking warning. Did you really have to get arrested for it? Although I'm stunned that for a jaywalking penalty, somebody had to call a bail bondsman. So I don't know what Shad's got in his record or anything, but too dangerous to walk, apparently, without being bonded.
I think the obstructing arrest and that sort of thing was the bigger issue with the bond.
And which, you know, and again, not to say anything too, but I mean, realistically, you could have a cop that was too jacked up, and maybe they dismiss that later. I mean, again, I can't imagine what the beef would have been with all of those jacked up dudes in Columbus, Ohio, that Shad Gaspard had to get arrested for jaywalking.
I think his claim was that he saw a near hit and run and was out there trying to investigate.
Which,
write that one down, everybody.
He could have done with JTG.
Yeah. Could have been. Jaywalking, JTG. Maybe there's a tie in there. This person wants to...
Well, we could have the Crime Busters. You know, again, Crime Time and the Dude Busters. You get Beretta and JTG together. They can investigate Chad on Superstars.
They could. They may have been on Superstars. I don't watch that show. I don't know what's going on there.
So I'm telling you, Tyler Rex and Chris Masters, epic.
Oh, my God. This person wants to know if we think the burial of Sheamus will be coming to an end anytime soon. He says, last year it felt like WWE had a legendary heel in the making, and since King of the Ring they have shown the mayonnaise boy no love. Will they ever get him back on track, or all the main event matches going to be face versus face now? What's the deal? I don't know about a legendary heel in the making. He certainly was a pretty decent heel, and I thought they had an eventual main eventer in the making, but just, you know, got on someone's bad side. And once you do, it's really hard to get out of that person's bad side. So I don't think it's coming to an end anytime soon. I suppose it's possible. He's been butting up to Triple H. He's a friend of his. But, you know, that doesn't promise anything. So I guess we'll see the future of the mayonnaise boy, as he's called here.
Maybe say it after the break, too. I got one on that one when it comes to WrestleMania and him and Daniel Bryan.
We'll give it to us real quick. 30 seconds.
Basically, it's like this. This could just be Sheamus' whole thing of, well, we beat you down, and he can talk about on the DVD in the future of, you know what, we all have cycles here, and I have built my way back to the top again if he ends up getting that U.S. title at WrestleMania.
It is possible. We'll talk a little bit more about this in the final segment after the break. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Worldwide here on the Sports Byline Radio Network. We are back here for the final segment on the show. Brian Alvarez here, WrestlingObserver.com. Mike Sempervivi, also WrestlingObserver.com. Couple final questions here. Jameel here wants to know, can you please provide me an update on Monkey in the Bank? Presume that means Money in the Bank, although that'd be a heck of a match. At WrestleMania 27, is there any chance of it still being on the card? What match do you think will close the show? No Money in the Bank, it's looking like. They're going to close with either Undertaker versus Triple H or the Cena versus Rock face-to-face. That was the plan as of this week. And will WrestleMania ever come back to Toronto? It's been rumored WWE wants to pull out of the area due to UFC taking over the Canadian market. I don't know about that.
They got to run Vancouver, but there's no way they're going to dump Toronto. No, they can still draw there, even though UFC does.
Yeah, they'll be back in Toronto. In fact, there were a lot of rumors they might come back this year, but I guess, you know, I don't know if one completely had to do with the other, but the idea that UFC sold so many tickets at such high ticket prices for a $12 million gate, $11 million gate, WWE was not doing an $11 million gate for WrestleMania. So they may want to run a year where there's no UFC events coming to Toronto anytime soon. So it's going to be a big show, though, the UFC in Toronto, and I'm going to be heading out there to that, it looks like. So should be a very fun time. And Mike, anything big coming up you want to plug for your show?
Well, I actually get the Georgia Wrestling History Show coming up this week with Rich Tate. And I also noticed on the when it comes to the Big 12 report that's going to be up on the website later, I kind of checked around some different newspapers, and I might actually have the best write-up on the thing taking place. All those people listening in the Vegas that used to be wrestlers, go to the site and check that out. And because the Big Ten is on the Big Ten Network right now, I guess you could do a report on those finals, too, for tonight.
Well, that'll be fun to check it out. WrestlingObserver.com. We've got tons of news. We've got tons of radio shows. In fact, if you go up there right now that this show is over, head up to WrestlingObserver.com. Head over to the right-hand side of the page, a list of our latest three absolutely free radio shows. They're MP3s. Click the link, download them. No pop-ups or anything like that. Just check out the shows, and if you like what you hear, consider signing up for more. That is it for today. We'll be back next week with a brand new show. Should be a fun time. The road to WrestleMania continues. Don't forget to check out Raw tomorrow night and all the other programming. You're listening to Wrestling Observer Worldwide on the Sports Byline Radio Network.